The Spotlight. It's a radio show where volunteers share stories of inspiration, share their journey, express their feelings, and tell us all about those who have touched their lives. And we play their favorite music. It is The Spotlight, Fridays 2 to 3 p.m. on Radio Mariah.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. My name is Irene Lasu, and of course on this edition we have stories from United Nations volunteers, and today our volunteer is my colleague Peter, and he's a journalist from Australia. He was previously stationed in Bangkok, Thailand for 4 years as a communication specialist for UNDP. Well, he studied a Master's of Journalism and Master's of International Relations at Monash University in Melbourne in Australia. Well, he's previously volunteered in Lebanon and as a surf lifeguard in Australia. His hobbies are martial arts like Thai kickboxing and jiu-jitsu. I hope I had that right. He also likes pina coladas and getting caught up in the rain. Peter, welcome to The Spotlight.
Thank you very much.
Right. So on The Spotlight, like we briefed you, of course, it's going to be your journey all through as a volunteer, and also how you have managed to grow and what gives you the confidence, what keeps you going. But most especially, would like to register more on your experience in South Sudan. Just tell us a little bit more. I mean, you came to South Sudan. What was the feeling like the day you arrived here?
Yeah, thank you very much. So the day I got here, I think my first reaction was it's very hot and someone's trying to take my camera but it was really fun. I had some trouble in the airport just because I brought a camera, and sometimes that could be a bit of a problem, but my colleagues from the UN were there and everyone was very nice. I think my initial feeling as soon as I got into the UNMISS compound, which is right next to the airport, was that everybody seemed to be a little bit crazy, but very nice. So I was pleasantly surprised. Felt like a community as soon as I got here.
Right. And just to touch a little bit about that situation with the camera there. So did you get the memo that when you get to the airport, you're not supposed to be taking pictures?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It wasn't out, actually. It was just scanned. Oh, sorry, they went through my bag and they found it. I did get that memo, and I didn't.
You weren't even using it.
No. It was in my luggage. They just they had a check of my luggage on the on the way in, and they were like, "Oh, what's this?" But anyway, that's fine. All part of the job.
Oh dear. I mean, who doesn't own a camera? Well, let's just get out of there. So you arrived, and then you say that the people here were what? You said what, crazy? What did you say, creative?
No, I said
in the UNMISS compound.
Yeah, I think everybody here is a little bit crazy, but in a good way,
to what degree?
An endearing way. I just think you have to be a little bit crazy. Yeah, I think you have to be a little bit crazy to be here. Yeah, but it's good. It's good. They're my people. I feel at home.
So it's a good crazy that you can work with.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how long have you been to the mission now?
So now it would be almost 8 months that I've been in South Sudan.
Right. So 8 months in South Sudan. Have you tried out the local food? How do you find the weather? Because I'm comparing that to what you have been probably used to in Australia or Lebanon, the places where you have been, Thailand.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm definitely used to hot weather. I don't know if I'm as used to as hot weather and as consistently hot weather as South Sudan. I think my first week here, it didn't get below 40 degrees. So that was a bit intense. It usually is only a couple of days in the year that it gets to 40 degrees in Australia. But yeah, no, it was it's not that hard to adjust. It's only a few more degrees that I'm used to, but it's still pretty intense. And as far as food goes, I'm loving the food here, actually. I love trying different cultures' foods. So I've never really been to Africa before. So it was kind of, I know that in the local canteens, there's a lot of influence from just East African food and Arabic food and then the local South Sudanese food. So it's kind of interesting going through all of the different dishes and I'm learning a lot.
Have you managed to master some of the foods, and which one is your favorite?
You know, I really like sukuma. I need my, especially
Oh.
being in Bentiu, there's not as much fresh
Okay.
fresh vegetables. So sukuma is one of my favorites. And I really like ugali, or I think
Oh,
asida,
ugali.
they call
Oh,
it in South
asida.
Sudan.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very close to. I mean, that's an East African cuisine. You find that in Kenya, you find that in Tanzania, and now South Sudan has adopted the culture of eating sukuma wiki. All right, so now let's talk about your time here. You're being separated from your family. How has that had any impact on you?
I mean, for most of my career, I've been outside of Australia, so I'm kind of used to it. I guess being in Africa, particularly in South Sudan, it's like roughly 2 to 3 days to get home. So I guess being this far away is not as fun as just being in Thailand, which is only, like 7 hours away from Australia. But yeah, I think I've been adapting pretty well. I did get to see my parents on my most recent R&R, so that's fine. And I don't have any children at the moment, or a wife and kids. So yeah, I think I'm doing okay.
Okay, how long have you been volunteering, and would this be your second volunteering job?
Yeah. So yeah, as you mentioned at the start, I did some volunteering when I was younger. I was a surf lifesaver in Australia for 2 years. That was just on weekends. And then I did a couple of months in Lebanon, 2016 or 2017, I can't quite remember. And then I did do 1 year of UNV in Bangkok. The rest of the time that I was there, I was a kid.
So, I mean, different places. What survival skills have you managed to acquire that you think could be valuable to anyone aspiring to becoming a volunteer?
I think we mentioned food, so I think being able to eat anything is a good survival skill. I think you just need to learn how to be comfortable being uncomfortable, if that makes sense. It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be a different culture. It's going to be different foods. It's going to be different climate. You might be like we are in most of the locations in South Sudan. We're living in containers, so sometimes the water doesn't work. Sometimes the electricity doesn't work. Sometimes the internet doesn't work. So I think you just need to go in with a few expectations of comfort, and then you'll be pleasantly surprised when things start working.
So you have to lower your expectations.
Yeah.
Okay. So how has your life changed by serving as a volunteer?
I think I have been through a period of like accelerated learning. I'm learning so much, especially being thrown into a team leader role in a remote duty station. There's so much to do, and pretty much only myself and my two national staff colleagues to help do it. So we kind of, yeah, it was a bit of a baptism by fire, but I feel like I'm getting better at radio. I was already quite interested in videography and photography and writing as a journalist, but I feel like those skills have improved drastically as well. I'm learning how to be a leader. I'm learning how to be in a difficult security situation. Yeah, I feel like it's so much has changed. I feel like I've done like 3 years of a metropolitan job in just 8 months. Yeah. So
Well, Peter, this is just the beginning. Thank you so much. And of course, we're learning from you. And if you, in case you just tuned in and you're interested in being a volunteer, here is a story that should motivate you in chasing your dreams. Peter, on this program, we give an opportunity to our spotlighters to choose a song, and I hope you have your list ready. What is your, best song?
So the first one is a song from an Australian band. They're called the Slingers, and it's called One More Day. Yeah, it just reminds me of home. It's just a very typical Australian song.
Oh, one more day it is. We'll be right back.
Flies buzz around a homemade irrigation. The labels on the bottles sag in condensation. Can hear the crunch of tires in the backyard gravel. Sister leans on grandpa's shovel. And the heat twists the air like crinkled cellophane. And it shimmers too like spilled kerosene round the driveway drain. one more day. Brother, one more day. You can still see the cricket on the TV from the back veranda. So the men stand around like Hitler's sack of panthers. But you watch your Rosales people, a perfect sky. And you feel perfect too, but you can't say why. Now Dave wears long sleeves to cover up the track marks on his arms just in case. Ah, but he can't hide what's written in the rings and lines in his face. Ah, but I had never seen a sun set through the gums like that before. And would it really matter if it was the last thing you ever saw? Grandpa and myself. Rows of beads and candles burning on the cluttered shelf. My grandpa did it in one August night with a sawn-off shotgun. Beneath my breath now. Don't ask me where he fucking got one. Now Dave comes in ragged, he's been round the bed. And he's all wigged out, he's gone off with mum again. Stands there and takes it like a backyard jacaranda, like Sisyphus, like a sunburned agapanda. One more day, one more hour, one more petal falls in the back veranda flower. Maybe then I find the words to say. One more day, I'd probably just piss it all.
To the Spotlight program, and that is Slingers, an Australian band playing here on the Spotlight program. Well, today our spotlighter is Peter, a journalist working with the UN mission here in South Sudan. Peter, what is it that attracted you to becoming a UN volunteer?
Actually, it was the position that attracted me here. I'm interested in a career in the United Nations, and I've always wanted to work in the field. And I think I'm stationed in Bentiu, and it's pretty much as field as you can get. So when I saw that opportunity, I really wanted to get the experience, and I really wanted to test myself somewhere like this.
I know you mentioned that the South Sudan job is your second volunteer job, but we would like to know how it was like for your first time volunteering. Was that in Lebanon? And how was it?
Yeah, my first time doing proper volunteer work, it was in Lebanon. We were in a place called the Bekaa Valley, where I think if I remember correctly, there's a million Syrian refugees. And we stayed there for 2 months. It was with an organization called Salam Ladfa. And they were kind of a local NGO that just provided a broad range of support. Maybe I would liken them to someone like World Vision or something like that. They had a very, very sort of broad mandate. They did case assessments that they would pass on to UNHCR. They play with kids to help with learning and also just to help with trauma. They did donations of clothes, food, and medicine. They did small impact projects where they would build wells and things like that. So that was pretty fun. It was a pretty diverse range of things that we had to
and
do.
And how long were you there?
So that was only 2 months that I was there.
I see. Right. Just tell us a bit more about some of the memorable moments you had in Lebanon and some you're having here in South Sudan, I mean, since you've been here for 8 months.
Yeah, sure. I think actually in both locations, seeing the kids is like really heartwarming. And also a bit like, it can be a bit sad, but when you see them getting help, it's pretty amazing. So In Lebanon, I think one of my favorite moments was just playing soccer or football. I think people call it football in South Sudan. Just playing football with the kids every afternoon. We'd just go down to one of the refugee camps and play football. And I'm Australian, so I'm pretty terrible at football. But it was a lot of fun. And we
it's
do similar things.
It's a learning experience. Right. Yeah. So is that what you're doing now in Bentiu? Or these are just recollections from Lebanon?
Yeah, so now there's less time to play football, especially with curfews. But no, we have a lot of interaction with the IDP community. We're next to South Sudan's biggest internally displaced persons camp. So I think the funnest times I have is interaction with the community. I mentioned that I liked martial arts, and there's actually a boxing club in the IDP camp who I've started visiting, which is really fun.
Okay, just looking at where you collect your interest of becoming a volunteer, was there anybody in your circles who had ever done anything like this, like becoming a volunteer?
Well, actually, I worked as a tour guide for kind of like a voluntourism company in Ecuador, in the Amazon jungle. And so I wasn't myself a volunteer, but I kind of facilitated volunteers to come and help build bathrooms and basically implement some wash programs. And during that time, I made a friend who's now one of my best friends, I would say. And he took a break from his work to go work in Lebanon. And he just told me about it. And so while I was studying, I just took a break from, you know, I just took my winter holidays in Australia, summer holidays for everyone else.
Right.
And I went to Lebanon to volunteer with him. He ended up staying 6 months. I only did the two because I had to get back to the university.
Wow.
But that was my real, that was kind of how I got into it.
Interesting. All right. It's time for your second song. What is your second song?
Okay. So my second song is Get by Talib Kweli. It's just like a really groovy hip hop song. I think, I don't know why, but I've just always really loved it. It's it kind of has a cool message, and I think it makes everyone dance, so it's a good one.
Well, let's just go listen to it, shall we?
Yeah. We sell crack to our own out the back of our homes. We smell the musk of the dusk and the crack of the dawn. We go through episodes too, like Attack of the Clones. What till we break a bag and you hear the crack of the bone? To get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. We commute the computer, spirits stay mute while your ego spread rumors. We survivalists turn to consumers. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. Why some people gotta live in a trailer, cuss like a sailor, I paint a picture with a pen like Norman Mailer. Me and Wella raised 3 daughters all by herself with no help. I think about the struggle and I find the strength of myself. These words melt in my mouth, they hot like the jail cell in the south before my nigga core bailed me out. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. We do or die like Best Stars, see the red sky, the window of the red island, the lead flies, the G-Rap shit, living the lead dive.
I woke up feeling brand new, I jumped up feeling breezy, smoke trees and we stay drunk. Yo, our activism attacking the system. The blacks and Latins in prison, numbers in prison. They victim black in the vision. Shit, and all they got is rapping to listen to. I let them know we missing you. Your love is unconditional. Even when the condition is critical, when the living is miserable, your position is pivotal. I ain't bullshitting you now. Why would I lie? Just to get by, just to get by, we get fly. The TV got us reaching for stars, not the ones between Venus and Mars. The ones to be reading for parts. To be get breath enhancements and penis enlarger. Saturday, Sunday, Sunday morning at the feet of the Father. They need something to rely on. We get high on all types of drugs. When all you really need is love.
To get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by.
My pants sing like John Lennon. Imagine all the people watch me rock like Paul McCartney from now until the last Beatles drop.
What?
Oh yes, welcome back. You're listening to the Spotlight program, and of course this happens every Friday right here on the Miraya Breakfast Show, highlighting the career journey of volunteers who managed to come and work with the UN mission here in South Sudan. And the spotlighter today is Bestin Bentu. He is Peter, and Peter is a journalist from Australia, and he's previously stationed in Bangkok, Thailand for 4 years. He has been telling us more about how the job here in South Sudan is his second volunteering job and what attracted him to it, and also his experience here in South Sudan, first at the airport. And you know, he says that you have to have a positive attitude. You must be able to be flexible, to adopt quickly. And what he points out is you need to be positive minded when it comes to adopting to different foods and different cultures, since you would be posted to different places. And yes, that brings me to the question, Peter, how does the prospect of being a volunteer in often hard conditions suit you? So how do you manage to maneuver all this, or to, you know, to navigate?
Yeah, well, I think if you're going to volunteer and you're going to do a job like this, you should just go for the hardest one you can get. I don't think it's worth doing it half. Especially like doing this job is really fulfilling and really fun, and I think that's a big reason why people do it. But also, you want to, if you think about it a little bit selfishly, you want to get something out of it that you can use in your career, maybe. So I think it's always good to, if you have the time and you have the resources to do something like this, I think you should try and pick somewhere that's a little bit more difficult, because those places also need the most help usually.
Right. So I think it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is random, but if you were stranded on a desert island, what luxury would you take with?
luxury, right? So it's not going to save my life.
What?
Okay. If it's just so you said luxury. Luxury, right? So it's not like a life-saving luxury thing, right? It's just something that I think some chocolate. I think chocolate would be it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sounds a bit luxurious there. Okay. So, well, coming away from there, so who are the people that have been so influential in your life?
That's a really good question. I've had some really good bosses over the years. When I first started at the UN, I started as an intern, actually, in Bangkok. And then I became a consultant and then a UNV, and now still UNB over here. But my first boss at the UN was very influential. He gave me a lot of really good tips for my career, and not only to do well in work, but to enjoy your work as well. So I think he was really good. And actually, my current head of field office, I could give her a shout out, Jane Coney, Madam Jane Coney. She's also a really big influence on me. kind of similar role to what my first boss was like. Very wise advice that she gives me.
And just to go back a little bit on the question that I asked you about how you being separated from your family, and you mentioned how, you know, you've not spent most of your time home in Australia, but how have your parents managed to deal with your career and success, given that your career has had you to move away from home?
Yeah, I think my dad likes it. He likes to hear the stories, and he's happy for me to be over here. I think my mum's less happy about it, but she's happy that I'm
obviously
happy.
Every mum would be less happy about it, as long as your job is going to take you away from them.
Yeah. But I promise my mum that I will never miss a Christmas. So I'm always home, at least for Christmas, and stay as long as I can.
Mm-hmm. So what would you have been if you hadn't become who you are today or at this moment? Do you ever think about that question?
I don't know. I don't think so. I kind of put all my eggs in one basket.
Right. So you're content and happy with what things turned out for you.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to be a journalist here. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, right. Well, Sam here. So are you happy with how you spent your time? Can you look at, at this point, at the scale of 1 to 10 and say, yes, time well spent?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would change is that I would, get into the type of work a bit sooner. That's about it.
Right. Well, Peter, thank you so much for letting us into your story. So you would give it a 9 on the scale of 1 to 10. Wow, impressive.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, we're still continuing with the program, but of course, curious about your music list. What is your third song?
Third one is Straight Up and Down by Brian Jonestown Massacre. And it's the band sounds a bit intense, but it's really not. They're really chilled. And it's a good song for a Friday afternoon, I think.
Nice. I hope the people will enjoy it. Well, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back. So we have come to the last segment of this program, the Spotlight program, a program that brings you stories of UN volunteers in South Sudan. Of course, our spotlighter today, our guest is Peter. Peter has told us a lot of stories of how this passion started from and how he is happy with his life. He couldn't have thought about anything else that he would have become other than being a journalist. And I'm happy for him for that. Now, Peter, every guest on the Spotlight is given a chance to choose a book. I don't know if you're a bookworm, but what book would you like to read in the fields or assignments?
That's a good question. I definitely love reading. What's the one that I read very well recently? I could recommend one. It has a bit of a, don't be put off by the name. I feel like people are going to be put off by the name, but it's called Emergency Sex.
We will be careful with judging the book by its cover. So what's the name again?
It's called Emergency Sex and Other Desperate Measures. And I just read it, and it's about peacekeeping in the 1990s. And it follows three peacekeepers through Cambodia, Somalia, Haiti, and Liberia, and Bosnia, I think. And it's just a very, especially for those of us working in peacekeeping, I feel like it has nothing to do with the title. I don't know why they put that title.
But I am tempted to ask you to repeat the title, but I don't know if you mind because your voice was interrupted somehow there.
Okay. So the title is Emergency Sex and Other Desperate Measures. And I think they just went with a sensationalist title to sell the book. But it's a very good book, and I think I just finished it, and I think anyone in peacekeeping would be interested to read it because it's very honest and exciting and very relevant to what we do.
Well, that's a must read for me. I will look it up. Thank you so much, Peter. Well, if you were given a chance to, you know, go back to your three songs and choose your favorite, what song would that be?
Ooh, I think it's going to be the first one I told you, One More Day by The Slingers.
The first song.
It's good to remind me of her.
Oh, yeah, you spoke about that. Right. Why didn't I think about it? All right, Peter, thank you so much for letting us in on your story on the Spotlight here on Radio Miraya. We wish you all the best.
No worries. Thank you so much.
All right. Peter Bettman from Australia. He was previously stationed in Bangkok, Thailand for 4 years as a communication specialist for UNDP. He studied a Master's of Journalism and a Master's of International Relations at Monash University in Melbourne in Australia. Now he is posted in Bentiu, of course, working with Radio Miraya. If you've been listening to Radio Miraya, you have heard him report on news on the Miraya Breakfast Show one or two times. And yes, that's the story. You catch us again next week as we interview more voices, more volunteers working with the UN mission. My name is Irene Lasu, and bye-bye for now.
Flies buzz around a homemade irrigation. The labels on the bottles sag in condensation. Hear the crunch of tires in the backyard gravel. Sister leans on grandpa's shovel. And the heat twists the air like crinkled cellophane. And it shimmers too like spilled kerosene round the driveway drain. One more day. Brother. One more day. You can still see the cricket on the TV from the back veranda. So the men stand around like Hinda Saga Panthers. But you watch the Rosales people, a perfect sky. And you feel perfect too, but you can't say why. Now Dave wears long sleeves to cover up the track marks on his arms just in case. How he can't hide what's written in the rings and lines in his face. How I had never seen a sun set through the gums like that before. And would it really matter if it was the last thing you ever saw? One more day, one more hour, as the sun dips behind the Telstar Tower. So I think of all the things that you would say. One more day, one more day. Coils burning in the poolside patio. Brother, we got skyhooks on the wireless radio. There's this picture of Dad and Grandpa and myself. Rows of beads and candles burning on the cluttered shelf. My Grandpa did it in one August night with a sawn-off shotgun. Beneath my breath now. Don't ask me where he fucking got one. Now Dave comes in ragged, he's been round the bend. And he's all wigged out. Gone off with Mum again. Mum just stands there and takes it like the backyard jacaranda, like Sisyphus, like a sunburned agapanda. One more day.